Okay, guys, welcome back to the OpLab podcast. I'm super excited today to have Steve Maxwell with us. I'll tell a little bit about Steve, and then I'm going to kind of let him tell his story. As you guys know, we like to kind of, everybody's got a story, and so Steve's got a great, great story, so let him kind of give a little bit of history there. But give you a little background on you know, Steve may not even know this, but I met him years ago at I can't remember what year it was, been a while, super slow convention in Orlando, Florida. And I didn't know who he was. I just happened, you know, we were sitting at a dinner table and heard him speak, and he kind of caught my eye. I was listening to him, and I didn't know he did jiu-jitsu at the time. I was doing another martial art at the time, and found out that later. So I've always kind of followed Steve, looked up to him, followed his work and so forth. And so that was way back when I first saw him. So really pleased and super excited to have him here today. Appreciate him spending time with us. And but Steve also, said the Super Slow was where I first met him. He had Maxercise at the time in Philadelphia, and great gym there. And went on and became really well known in the with kettlebells. I think he was one of Pavel's first coaches. Traveled around the world teaching, doing kettlebell instruction and so forth. And also, as I mentioned, I think he was the first, if I understand correct, the first American really certified to teach Gracie Jiu-Jitsu.
That's correct.
And then became a black belt under Heltzen and has won many titles, Pan Ams and Worlds. And actually, one of our instructor, Rafael Hozendo, actually competed against your son in Pan Ams a few years ago. I remember that. But anyway, great guy. And I just want to really just pick his brain today, let him share some things with us. And then we were talking before the podcast, even, we'd love to maybe bring Steve down for a seminar at our gym as well. It'd be great for him to share his knowledge and experience. So anyway, welcome to the podcast, Steve. Super excited to have you here. And if you don't mind, just kind of maybe giving a little bit of background of yourself and kind of what you're up to now. And we'll just take it from there, because I know we can talk all day about this, both of us, things that we're passionate about, because I think we both have a lot of things, the same things that we're passionate about. So, again, appreciate you.
Thanks. We've both been around for a while. How old are you now, bro?
I'm 50. I just turned 54 last week.
Okay, so. Yeah. Well, 68. Right. So I have a couple years on you, yeah. I started back in Carlisle, Pennsylvania, around 1964. My father bought me my first barbell set from York, Pennsylvania. And I was having some problems in the neighborhood with the older boys picking on me a little bit. And there was a big age gap. There was a bunch of older kids that were in this neighborhood. It was like one of those new house development areas, you know? And so my brother and I were like the young kids. And so my dad saw what was going on. And so he was an old Navy boxer during World War II. He was in fact, I was just watching The Pacific, that series that was on HBO. But my father, he was in those naval battles. He was in Guadalcanal and all that. And he saw all that. His ship got 13 battle stars. So he was old school World War II vet. You know, that was a whole different generation. And as soon as he saw what was going on, he said, I have to toughen these boys up, and got out the old horsehair boxing gloves and basically just taught us how to, fight. But I discovered from an early age I was a natural grappler. I preferred wrestling and grappling more than I did boxing. And so he had me go out for the seventh grade wrestling team. And all this happened together, the wrestling, the boxing. And then he bought me this barbell set, and that was the start. And all the old York barbell courses, I think I owned every one of Bob Hoffman's courses at that time. And Bob Hoffman, for those that don't know, was the father of American weightlifting.
Okay.
And York was the mecca of Olympic weightlifting in those days. But see, in those days, they didn't separate Olympic lifting and bodybuilding and physical culture. It was, everything was combined. All the old school bodybuilders lifted weights competitively, and they also competed in bodybuilding, and they did bodyweight exercises and gymnastics, and it was, you know, in those days it was called physical culture.
Yep.
So that's where I cut my teeth. And did all the programs of the day, you know, of that era. Maybe you remember the 20 rep squat routine.
Yeah.
Very popular back in the day.
Yeah.
One of the hardest things I've ever done. And maybe you remember the old bulk up routines, you know, the gallon of milk a day plus three meals.
Yep.
And I gained a lot of muscular body weight my senior year after I got done with wrestling. I decided I wanted to get really big and strong, and entered as a freshman at Westchester State Teachers College. It wasn't even a university in those days. It was renowned as a physical education school. And to give you an idea of like what a venerable old PE program it was, one of the things we learned was wooden Indian club. That was part of the curriculum.
Okay.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Men's formal gymnastics, not like modern gymnastics, but like group gymnastics, you know, doing mass exercises together. Okay.
Yeah.
You know, it's like squeeze gymnastics. All the old school stuff was all part of this physical education curriculum. And that's how I was educated. It was so old fashioned that, you know, men and women were separate dorms and none of this co-ed stuff. There was hair rule, you know, like in the military.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And after graduation, I wrestled all 4 years, and it was a Division I NCAA program. Some pretty tough guys. And I ended up with an 18-2-1 record my senior year in Division I wrestling, and went on to coach, taught high school. Didn't like it. Didn't like working with kids that much. And right about my second year in college, I discovered the first Nautilus gym in Pennsylvania. It was run by a fellow by the name of Dr. Greg Ellis. He wasn't a doctor back then. He himself was working on his master's degree in exercise physiology. And he and this bodybuilder, martial artist guy, John Carton, open up this Nautilus gym, one of the very first ones on the East Coast, probably. And I had read about Arthur Jones and these Nautilus machines in the old Perry Rader Iron Man magazine. Nowadays, Iron Man magazine is just this awful steroid bodybuilding thing. But back in the day, it was a really down-home, great source of information on strength training and everything. And Jones had written several articles. Man, I was fired up. I wanted to find out about these newfangled Nautilus machines. And I remember the one article called The Upper Body Squat. He was talking about the pullover torso. Because I knew what, you know, heavy squatting could do for the body as far as size and strength. I just had to try that. Upper body squat, you know, it was a great term. And I went on down there, made the mistake of telling Greg Ellis that I was a college wrestler and I was in great shape and I wanted to work out hard. That guy damn near killed me, man. I was in good physical condition. I took the beating from the workout. I made it through the workout without getting sick or anything. You know, a lot of people used to get pretty nauseous if trying too hard too fast. I made it through, but man, I had to sit for 2 hours before I could drive up. I was just shaking like a leaf. And I was convinced that there was something about this Nautilus equipment that was really special. And I would go down. I didn't have much money in those days. So I worked out a deal where I'd work weekends for those guys. So I was working weekends. That was my first job in the fitness industry. This was about 1972. And I would work weekends. And Greg taught me a really good education on how to train people with Nautilus equipment. And then it was a short jump from there to Super Slow. I actually created, later on I moved to Philadelphia and I opened up, it wasn't my place, but I ran a fitness center at the old Society Hill Club in Philadelphia. It was a venerable old gym, racquetball, tennis club with the only indoor-outdoor swimming pool in Philadelphia. And the owner was very interested in getting some Nautilus equipment. So, well, even before that, I worked, maybe you remember this guy, Kenny Dion. And he created a whole chain of Nautilus equipment around the Philadelphia area. Okay. It was like a chain in those days. And he had this really beautiful model wife, similar to Arthur Jones and his wife. So but it was more of a sales thing, you know. They're all into hardcore sales. But I did learn the art of selling. And once I went to Society Hill Club and I started this Nautilus Fitness Center in there, I stayed there for quite a while. And then they went out of business, and I opened up my own gym in 1990 in January. And I didn't have really the budget to have the big expensive equipment. I mean, I would have loved to have had Med-X and all that. So I ended up with mostly Hammer Strength and vintage Nautilus pieces. Hammer Strength was okay. It wasn't ideal. You know, the pieces were pretty big for smaller people. But basically, the strength curves are pretty clean, and there was very little friction. It was great for super strong. And then I adapted all those Hammer Strength equipment for smaller people. You know how they used to put back pads and all that?
Yeah.
I actually put spacer boards and moved all the seat pads so that a tiny woman could fit in those things. And I basically retrofitted them. And then after reading Ken Hutchins, Super Slow, the Ultimate Protocol, I called him up and I arranged for him to come to Philadelphia. And I wanted him to do a certification for me and my staff. It was the very first Super Slow certification. So myself, my ex-wife, who later became a master trainer, DC Maxwell, and six others, we all got certified in a three-day weekend certification, and included a written test and a practical test. We had to actually work Ken out, who purposely did every imaginable mistake, and our job was to catch him. And then he also watched us work on a client, one of our clients. So it was three parts, work him out, work a client in front of him, and this written test. And it was really informative. And then while he was there, he retrofitted all my old vintage Nautilus with super slow cams. Yeah. He had these wooden and plastic cams, and he retrofitted my old Nautilus plate loading bicep tricep, a plate loading pullover. Maybe you remember the old hip abductor, adductor.
Yeah.
And even he was impressed with some of the strength curves of some of the vintage Hammer equipment. And I also, around this time, had become friends with Gary Jones. That was Arthur Jones' son. Right. So Gary came up several times and stayed with me at my house. And we became friends. He was quite an amazing guy. And then later, all his stuff was bought by Life Fitness. But yeah, Gary Jones was almost as much of a genius as his dad, and you know, came up with these designs. A lot of my Hammer Strength, my starter line, came from Dr. Ken Leisner. Maybe you remember that guy.
I actually got to meet him a few years ago. I used to a good friend of mine and a client, Sam Kelly, got to be friends with Ken somehow, and he brought him in. It was like, you know, like I was like a little kid. I mean, it was nearly 50, but you know, he came and actually, I mean, we were doing a high intensity circuit that day. He came in and I remember him spotting me on the bench press. I'm like, I can't believe Dr. Ken is here spotting me while I'm training. And we went to breakfast afterwards, and that was, you know, a very memorable thing, you know, getting to meet him. And because I used to, when you're talking about like the Iron Man, I remember, and I'm sure you remember the old HIIT newsletters that used to come.
Yes.
And he would have articles in there, and I just couldn't wait to get those articles and read them because I was always inspired, you know, after reading them. And he was, he's a great guy. Yeah, awesome.
Well, you know, I just spoke to Ken Hutchins not too long ago. And, all those old newsletters are available now. You can get them through Drew Bray's website.
Okay.
Yeah. They took out, like, all the announcements and stuff.
Okay.
And but the original content is there. They just took out all the announcements.
Okay.
And just kept all the original articles and stuff like that.
Yeah, I have some.
But yeah, Dr. Ken, man, when you talk about high intensity circuit,
yeah.
You better get ready to work, man. So I bought all his old used Hammer stuff.
Okay.
But he would change equipment like he changed socks, man. That guy was always completely, you know, changing out equipment, and I got some great deals into this stuff, man. Really, really good deals. So yeah, that was my start. And then I ran a play. I opened my own, the Society Hill Club went out of business. And, you know, we had a great amount of equipment in there. And I often wonder what happened to it all. Because basically the sheriff foreclosed on the mortgage. Unbeknownst to me, the owner got in some problems with back taxes and, you know, owing money. And they just came in and shut the gym down, put chains in the door. Yeah. And that was quite a shock, you know. I had just bought my first house, and I just had a new baby boy. And all of a sudden, they're putting chains on the place where I do my business, you know. It was like, wow. And, you know, this is back in the day when personal training was just brand new, you know. I mean, the first time I realized that someone would be willing to pay me perfectly good money to put him through a workout, I was like, wow, you know, I was doing it for free.
Yeah, yeah.
And now someone's willing to pay me. That's wonderful, you know. Yeah. So, yeah, so it's a real shame about what happened, but it launched me into opening up my own space. And I opened up in a shoestring budget with, you know, a few Nautilus machines and this hammer strength stuff. And then I would just keep buying new stuff every now and again. And, you know, I had some pretty interesting equipment. You know, I had a rotator cuff machine from Hammer Strength, and not too many of those. You know, I had a four-way neck machine. You don't see too many of those. I had a supinator, pronator, you know, grip. I mean, I pretty much had it covered, you know. And it was really, really nice little gym. And I ran that with my ex-wife, DC Maxwell, for close to 16 years, I guess. And then we had some problems and ended up having to shut down our doors. It was mostly due to the building. The building was condemned by the city. It was an old textile manufacturing plant on Chestnut Street. And I'm trying to think of the address. It was a couple blocks up from the Liberty Bell and from Independence Hall, all that historic stuff in Philly. And 707 Chestnut Street on the second floor. But the building was old and kind of decrepit. They were going to condemn it and raise it. Instead, the owner decided to rehab it. But in the meantime, we had to move all the stuff out. And oh, it was a nightmare. Pretty much the stress cost me my marriage. Yeah. So from that point, I pretty much lived like a teenage kid. I was a man in my 50s. By the way, that old site at 707 Chestnut Street, it was the first Brazilian jiu-jitsu school in the Eastern Seaboard.
Okay.
Before Renzo Gracie, before Marcelo Garcia, before John Donaher, before any of these guys, there was Steve Maxwell, very first one. And it was the first Gracie Jiu-Jitsu Academy on the Eastern Seaboard. So we had like these two businesses going. Uh-huh. But man, that killed us when we had to move all that stuff out of there. Oh, we moved to a temporary spot, and then we were supposed to move back in. I never made it to that point. We had already split. I moved in a camper van. Camper van. I signed the house, gave everything to the ex-wife, just wanted to get out of there. And that was it. Left everything behind. Lived in this camper van for almost 3 years.
Oh, wow.
Traveling around. I was working for a pro baseball player out in Arizona part-time. This guy, Dave Bell. He used to play for the Phillies. And I was basically his personal coach. And he's paying me real good money at the time, you know, cash. So I was living good. Plus, you know, I cashed in an insurance policy. So I had plenty of money, but started running out of money. And just prior to leaving Maxercise, I started to mess with the kettlebells. And I got into Scott Sonnen and his grappler's toolbox.
Yeah.
And there was some good stuff in there, you know. But I was looking. Once I got involved with jiu-jitsu, I started getting a little bored with the old super slow and the high intensity training. I kept feeling like I was missing something. In truth, I wasn't. I wasn't. But, you know, some of the slick advertising that was done by the old Dragon Door group, you know, it was very compelling, you know. It's pretty evil, really, because they're just basically lying through their teeth. In truth. Really? All that kettlebell stuff was complete nonsense. It took me a while to figure it out. But, you know, it's interesting because even early, I don't know whether you ever met DC. She was also a master trainer in Super Slow. Do you remember meeting her? Pretty blonde.
At the convention, yes. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And later she was on Pavel's first women's kettlebell book.
I had that.
Yeah. From Russia.
I bought that for my wife for Christmas, and she didn't think that was a good idea.
Well, you know, it's funny because about a year in, my DC said, you know, wouldn't it be a real kick in the pants if 10 years down the road, we just find out that this stuff was really bad for you? And I just didn't want to hear it, you know. I said, hush your mouth, you know. And sure enough, she was absolutely correct. Because I used to feel damn near injured after every kettlebell workout, you know, with his high rep snatches and all that kind of that micro trauma and stress. I never had an acute injury, but it was a lot of little subacute injuries, little insults, you know. And I built up quite a case of osteoarthritis in my right shoulder, primarily from pushing snatches, but a lot of this stuff, you know, even the turkeys get up nonsense. And I'm embarrassed to admit that I was the one that introduced the turkeys get up to the kettlebell community. Oh, wow. I taught Pavel that move.
I did not know that.
Yeah. It was an old wrestler exercise that we used to do with dumbbells.
Okay.
But, you know, it was stupid then and it's stupid now, but we just didn't know any better. I should have known better. But, you know, I just kind of fell in love with the mythology of this kettlebell stuff, you know. Pack the fat off your muscles without the dishonor of diet and aerobics. What nonsense. I've never seen anyone get lean on any program without dieting, you know. But, you know, it sounded great, you know. You know, kettlebell training gobbles up the calories. No, it doesn't. Kettlebell training selectively recruits and works your fast twitch muscles fibers. No, it doesn't. It's none of those things, you know. None of those things. And any results that I got from kettlebell training, I could have had better and possibly quicker results, certainly safer with other ways of doing it. You know, just because a person gets a certain result a certain way doesn't mean he couldn't have done it better or maybe faster or certainly safer. And, you know, all the mantra for all the young guys is strength and hypertrophy. It's all you ever hear in any forum. Strength and hypertrophy. They want big muscles. They want to be strong. Everyone forgets wear and tear and safety.
Yeah.
No one's looking at long-term effect.
Yeah.
And if you notice, all these YouTube wonders are all in the 20s, 30s. A couple guys in their 40s.
Yeah.
Occasionally, you see guys that pretty much sold out and are using all sorts of steroids, and they look pretty young in their 60s. But, you know, it's obvious that they're using performance-enhancing drugs and so forth. But you don't see anyone natural out there. And rarely do you see anyone over 50 hawking these type of workouts.
Yeah, I saw your, because I said I followed you for years, and I just, you know, did your course that you did talking about, you know, really kind of, I think you talked about going full circle, and that's when I reached out to you. It's like, man, this is similar to what I went through, you know, and, you know, I was, you know, doing Super Slow. I actually became a master level instructor with Super Slow and then began to question things, and it's kind of funny because I got into kettlebells because of you.
Well, let me apologize to you now. I'm sorry.
No, because I look at it as a learning experience, you know. And so I was talking to somebody earlier today. I said, you know, one thing I think is different about our perspective, because I don't know if you know Lawrence O'Neill. He has what's called the High Intensity Business Podcast. He's got a lot.
I know who he is. Listen to it because I don't have a business to run anymore.
Yeah, but he has a lot of the guys, you know, I remember from when I was in Super Slow, have been on there, and a lot of those guys have continued to do it. So I think, you know, if anything, I'd like to say is, like, from my experience is that, you know, to those guys, some people might say, well, you've never done this. How do you know it doesn't work or blah, blah, blah? Well, I like to tell people, like, I have done both. You know, I did, you know, I was we were the first CrossFit affiliate in Greenville. You know, and went down that road. And I'm not saying, you know, you mentioned, like, those things, it's not that they don't work.
They work,
but there's a price sometimes to pay, you know. And I've had two hip surgeries, you know, both hips resurfaced. And so that's when I really started looking back and then seeing also with my clients, like we're getting results, but I'm starting to see too many injuries. And so that's really kind of where we're at too, is, you know, looking at it from the other side is like, it's not just about the results, about the, you know, if you want to be in it for the long haul, you know, you got to look at that, the, you know, potential risk as well, and kind of weigh those two things out. And I think that's, you know, exactly what you're talking about.
Long-term wear and tear. No one's looking. And, you know, well, case in point, my ex-wife, one of the early adopters of kettlebell training for women, she's had hip replacement surgery.
Okay.
All right. Pavel Satsoli has had both elbows operated on a couple times. One reason he went to Simple and Sinister, maybe you've heard that book, where he's just pretty much talking about doing get-ups and swings as like a minimal program, because he can't do anything else.
Okay.
You know, when he was on the Joe Rogan show, his latest workout is just swings and dips. Joe says, how come you only do two exercises? Paul says, because I like it. But he wasn't being honest. He should have said, because I can't do anything else. I can't do pull-ups. I can't climb a rope. You know, I can't do that stuff because my elbows are all screwed up from doing all these kettlebell things, you know?
Right.
But luckily, he's tried to distance himself from kettlebells by getting more into barbell stuff and all that. But see, the whole kettlebell philosophy was based on the 1980s Soviet weightlifting programs.
Okay.
Yes, they were, if you want to be a weightlifter. If your idea is to be a weightlifter or a competitive lifter, or competitive kettlebell guy, you know, those things work. But the idea that just because it makes you strong at weightlifting or kettlebells doesn't necessarily mean it's the best way to condition yourself for other sports or even for just life. Dan John, another guy, you know, very good writer, very persuasive. You know, I've read his books. I thought they were pretty good. Yep. But no one realizes that he's had double hip replacement surgery. Now, I don't know about you, but I don't want to take advice from someone that's ruined his joints using a particular philosophy. You know, it just galls me to think that, you know, these systems that they're espousing are destroying people.
Right.
And they're not being honest. You know, the CEO of Strong First, Bretton Jones, 9 knee surgeries. And he always brags about it, you know. These guys have had terrible back problems. You know, Mark Rifkin, terrible sciatic and back problems. So my point is, what kind of program destroys your body?
Yeah.
And why would you want to do it? And these were, you know, guys that really knew how to use form and good technique. Doesn't matter. Figure this way. If a tennis player swinging a tennis racket that weighs about not even a pound, right, can get tennis elbow and tennis shoulder and, you know, wrist and overuse injuries. Or, you know, Tiger Woods had spinal surgery. He's just swinging a damn golf club. What do people think is going to happen when you start swinging these big mace bells around and club bells and snatch and kettlebells? I mean, what do you think is going to happen? I mean, even swimmers get overuse injury in the shoulders. And, you know, swimming's supposed to be so gentle. But my point is, you know, these repetitive, fast, explosive movements done over and over and over again, you may not feel an injury right away, but you get these subacute insults that slowly erode your joints. It's kind of a little bit like smoking, right? I knew guys that smoked for decades and they seemed fine, and then all of a sudden they're diagnosed with emphysema, or they find out from the doc that they have a black spot on their lung and they got lung cancer. So it's very similar with this other stuff. But I'm not saying it doesn't work. Absolutely. There are people that have gotten big and strong and lean using kettlebells. It's just not the safest, best way to do it. There's much better ways to do it. And that's why I went back to super slow.
Yeah.
Real good, safe way to do it.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And isometrics too, by the way. That became a big... And it's funny because back in the 60s when I was a kid, my wrestling coach used to have us do isometrics. And it was all the rage back then. And then, like a lot of good ideas, you just kind of forget why. But at least with super slow, there was always an isometric aspect at the end of the set, you know, where you would continue to inroad for 5-10 seconds, you know, after all movement was impossible. So
we've been using a lot with are you familiar with ARX?
I've seen the equipment.
We have a couple of those machines, and I love it for the for the feedback, because you can, you're really competing against yourself, but you can control the movement speed so the person doesn't have to, that was one of the issues I found with super slows. It's hard to get people to go slow when it's hard. So the machine controls it, so it makes it very safe. But you can see, if you're on offing or segmenting, because it's reading out, the force you're creating and the tension you're creating. But it's also awesome for isometrics, because, you can kind of hit a load and, okay, I'm going to stay at that load as long as I can, or you can try to, beat your previous best or whatever. But it's fantastic. I love the isometrics on that for that reason. I thought that's one of the issues with isometrics. If you say go 50%, it's hard to know what 50% is. And so, I love the isometrics as well. And I think, like you said, they're incredibly safe. Even people that have joint issues and things like that, you can really get
training. And that's one reason I kind of prefer the yielding isometrics over the overcoming. You can use a set load and just hold it. Yep. So you know exactly how much and how much resistance and for how long.
Right, right.
And I tend to kind of gear more towards the yielding isometrics a little bit more even than the time static contraction. Although I'll tell you, man, for small muscle groups like grip, fingers, neck, the overcoming isometrics are really, really good.
Okay.
Really, really good. I still use it. And I don't know. Once I had left the business and moved my camper van, I came back out for the Boys Are Back seminar with Mike Mahler in Las Vegas. And that's when I realized, wow, there's still an opportunity to go around teaching stuff I know. And I started getting inquiries from Europe and from Australia, from the United Kingdom. And I started traveling. And I became a digital nomad, and for the last 15 years, I had been traveling full time. I sold my camper van, and I pretty much lived out of one bag. Talk about minimalist. So I was a minimalist, basically digital nomad. And I started an online program of personal training and dietary, fat loss, all the health stuff. And then I was traveling, teaching seminars. And the seminars basically paid for my Airbnbs or hotel stays, And then I was actually making my money doing videos and teaching these seminars. And it was really good. I got to really see the world. I saw a lot of really cool places, traveled all over. But I was given a warning about this whole COVID thing almost like a half year in advance. And you may laugh, it's not very scientific, but I use an astrologer who is uncannily accurate. And this guy told me, he says, hey, 2020 is going to be a really hard year, and you're going to want to get off the road and pull up somewhere and just hang out for at least 6 months to a year.
Wow.
Yes. He says, and he suggested I go back to the United States, because I sure would have hated to have been caught in a foreign country, man.
Yeah.
Being a U.S. citizen. Can you imagine? Yeah. I read about a British couple that got caught and couldn't get back to the U.K. And they basically went through their life saving, staying in a hotel. Because what are they going to do?
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. That's amazing.
So, at least I would have been able to make money during the shutdowns and all that.
Yeah.
But because I became kind of a minimalist body weight, super slow guy, and started specializing in body weight super slow, and also Ken's time static contraction isometrics, I began to teach that, and people really liked it, very favorably disposed towards it, because it requires such minimal equipment.
Right.
I remember reading a long time ago, Arthur Jones talked about, really, if a person would just specialize in shins and dips and body weight squats, working up to a one-arm chin and, you know, one-legged squat, that they would basically meet their genetic potential. That you wouldn't need anything more than just a basic chin-up bar and a pair of dip bars and bodyweight squats. That always stuck with me.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't have to be complicated.
Right.
You know, I see people geeking out over machines, you know. I think there's this new one I read about. Someone in one of the gyms got the glutinator or something.
Yeah, I have that one, actually. Yeah.
And I'm sure it's a fantastic piece of equipment.
Yeah.
But my point is, you don't need any equipment to meet your genetic potential for strength.
Yeah.
However, that being said, having equipment is pretty damn nice. Really, you know. And it's for
a,
sure.
It's just a tool. It's just a tool.
It's right. Just a tool.
Yeah.
It's, you know, more how you use the tool. Maybe you've seen recently, Jones has this concept of doing a back extension and leg extension at the same time. I remember talk about this in the 1970s.
Okay. Okay.
It's basically a lower back and leg extension.
Okay.
And you do both. So you start seated forward, and as you extend your legs, you extend your torso back as your legs come up.
Oh, wow.
So you're basically laying flat out. Big old hip belt holding you down.
Okay.
Jones had never built the machine, but there's a guy that just did. But Jones had mentioned that he felt that it might actually be too intense, contracting the lumbar spine, the glutes, and the thighs all at once.
Okay.
That it might actually be too intense for some people. But, yeah, I just saw it on one of my Facebook feeds. And it looked, I remember Greg Ellis talking about this. Oh, my God, like 30, 40 years ago, you know. This was an idea, a concept in Jones' mind,
yeah.
You know, of creating a leg extension, lower back at the same time. But so he's dead.
So somebody's done it now.
Someone's done it, yeah.
Who is it? Do you remember?
Nah, it was on Roger Schwab's feed.
Okay.
Roger Schwab from Bill.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
Yeah. A lot, you know, it's funny, I put Roger through his very first Nautilus workout.
I did not know that.
Yeah, yeah, the old Huff and Puff gym.
Okay.
And he kind of came in as, he was a strength coach, I think, for Delaware University.
Okay.
And a little skeptical. And boy, did we beat his ass, man. And he became a true believer.
Yeah.
And then, you know, he became really devoted to Nautilus and Jones.
Yeah. It's kind of funny you mentioned that.
They use that X-Force stuff.
Yeah, I've seen that. Yeah. It's kind of, I never made this connection before until you just said that, but it kind of reminds me of, you know, I worked, how I got started in high school, we were very fortunate. We had some Nautilus equipment there. And we kind of, looking back, they were teaching us all the right stuff, but they didn't really understand, you know, the nuances of it, you know. So we, you know, being kids, we're going through it, but we're really, you know, we're getting results with it, but it's, you know, looking back, we got so much better results if we really understood or did, you know, really the true Nautilus protocol with it. But then, you know, got away from that in college and doing the old bodybuilding workouts and all that. And then I started working at went to Clemson. And so it was a Clemson Nautilus. And so I didn't know it at the time. And now it's kind of funny looking back, but same thing as you, you know, talking about going through that first workout. I didn't go in there really with an attitude, but I remember going in, I had my weight belt and all of that, you know, and so they tried to kill me, you know, and but I, you know, same as you, like I made it through it, but it's like, man, this is awesome. I wouldn't, I think they thought they were going to run me away. And then what makes you think about that is like a little bit like that's to me a little bit like how jiu-jitsu was at first, because like now we have a fundamentals, we have a beginner class, it's much softer entry into jiu-jitsu, but in the old days, it's like you showed up. And you just got, you know, and really it was, you know, trial by fire. So, you know, a lot of guys wouldn't come back after the first day. And so it's kind of interesting that I never put that connection together, but that's really how the high intensity training was back. I mean, that's how you, cause you had to convince people that it worked, you know, and the same thing with jiu-jitsu back then, you know, if you came in you train and you sport at the end and, you know, you took it easy on them. There's nothing to this. You know, it's kind of the same. Now you don't really have to do that. But in the old days, that's how you
Back in the old days, you had the serious doubters. Greg, after Huff and Puff Gym opened up the Nautilus Medical Sports Industries in Broomall, PA, and it was a vast warehouse full of equipment. And it was like a who's who of Philadelphia athletes, you know? We were getting pro football players, baseball players. I don't know whether you remember Cassie Rush from Immaculata, but they were the NCAA women's basketball champions.
Okay.
Maybe you heard the term fox catcher.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, yeah, that's that crazy guy, DuPont, that murdered that wrestler. But before that, they had an amazing equestrian team, and they had triathlons. They had a swim team because they had an Olympic-sized swimming pool there. So we got, you know, the swimming team from Foxcatcher. I mean, it was just amazing. But a lot of these people, like you say, very skeptical. You know, they came from other types of backgrounds, and the idea that these machines could do something for them. So if the person expressed doubt or debated with us, we would have a contest to see who could drop the guy the quickest. And usually the guy would get through the fourth machine before they had to throw up. Usually by the time they did the leg extension, leg press, got to the pullover, they were turning green. And then you put them on either pull downs or negative chins, they were done, man. They won't even get through to the fifth machine.
Yeah.
That happened time after time. And the ironic thing is, the bigger and stronger they were, the quicker they would get exhausted and suffer that metabolic meltdown, you know?
Right.
Because they had a lot of muscle mass, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, we used to take bets on how quick we could drop somebody. And, you know, we took turns as who gave the free intro. And we'd always take a little bets amongst ourselves. If the guy was being a jackass, you know what I mean?
Yep.
If he was being a little disrespectful or arguing, you know.
Yeah.
Say, okay, well, let's just go through this little workout, and then you'll be able to make up your mind.
Right.
Sometimes they didn't come back. Most of the time they did, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Usually they were true believers after the experience. Exactly. But, you know, it's interesting because one of the things that happened to me, there was a while where I was really into heavy weights. And I really liked heavy benching and squatting and deadlifting. I wasn't a competitive powerlifter, but I was pretty damn strong. And at one point, I actually squatted 505 pounds, which for a middleweight wrestler, that's pretty damn strong.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And I had done a 20 rep squat with over 300 pounds, which pretty damn strong. You know, not elite, but certainly way above average.
Right.
And I noticed after training a few months on Nautilus that all my bench, everything was way down. And I thought, you know, this used to be the, well, I'm getting weaker. I went back and, you know, not realizing that lifting heavy weights is a specific skill.
Yeah.
And your muscles fire in a particular pattern. And if you don't do it, you'll lose it. But it didn't mean I was getting weaker. Right. In fact, every workout, I was getting a little stronger than the Nautilus machines, but I had lost some of the skills of lifting the heavy barbells.
Yeah.
Of lifting the heavy. And then once I understood that, I just didn't care about the barbell stuff anymore.
Yep.
I realized how silly it all was anyway.
Yep.
You know, the strength was relative, and strength is pretty specific. But with the Nautilus equipment, you know, you got a general type of strength that was applicable to anything, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I went through that same, like I said, that same thing. I remember, you know, doing, and I remember thinking, I must have wasted my time these last few years because I hadn't bench pressed in forever. And I get on the bench, like, oh, but then within like 6 months, you know, you're doing more than you've ever done. And that's kind of what I experienced. And like you said, it's just, you know, it's just skill. It's just building the skill of that movement. You know, it's not about, you know, really strength. And that's where I see, like, you know, like jiu-jitsu, you see that, right? You can have guys that, like, if you got them in the weight room, they might be really strong lifting, and then on the mat, they don't feel that strong. And you got other guys that they don't lifting, they're not that impressive, but on the mat, oh my God, it's like a whole, you start realizing how specific, you know, I mean, there's a general aspect of strength, but also when you start comparing, like, if you look at the, like the NFL combines, for instance, you know, some of those, they're all just attributes. They're just testing attributes, but you know, how much somebody can bench press, how many times they can bench press 225 really is not going to be an indicator of, you know, what kind of football player they're going to be.
Yeah. Can he catch the ball? You know?
Yes.
Or, You know, is he going to fumble every time he gets hit? You know, I mean, there's all those other factors that way more important.
Yeah.
Of course, I can see like running speed would be.
Yeah, the speed stuff. Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, I never understood the bench press. That's pretty silly. You know? And the way they do it and the way they throw that barbell around makes my shoulders ache watching it, you know? But yeah, I mean, it's interesting because my daughter, I hate to say it, but she's a CrossFitter.
Okay.
And she is strong.
Yep.
For a woman, a young woman, she is really strong. Give an example. She sent me a video of her climbing a 20-foot rope. Uh-huh. And she did it 3 times without her legs.
Oh, my gosh.
Now, how many women do you know that can do that?
Not many.
How many women do you know that can climb a rope even with her legs?
Right, right.
You know? She was alternating back and forth with a girlfriend. Okay. Yeah. And she won Pennsylvania State Powerlifting Championship. And I watch her bench. And she arches that back. Her butt's on the bench.
Right.
She gets back arch and she's on her tippy toes. And the bar is only traveling about that much. That's the way she levers it, you know?
Yep.
And I realize that's the skill, right?
Yep.
That's the skill of weightlifting. You're doing everything in your power to make the lift easier.
Yeah.
And to make the work less.
Yeah.
Whereas what we're doing in super slow or the old high intensity Nautilus protocols, but even using body weight, we're doing everything to make the exercise harder.
Right.
Making it as hard as absolutely possible. Yeah. Case in point, I like body weight squats. And it's, you know, you think body weight squats, well, you know, I could do like several hundred of them, you know? I did Hindu squats 1 year in a misguided effort to set a PR. I did 1,200 squats in about an hour and a half. Pretty stupid, but you know, it was New Year's Day. You know? But, you know, so yes, you can squat high numbers with your body weight. And I learned a technique called intentional agonistic co-contraction, IOC. Intentional agonistic co-contraction. Okay. Basically, you kind of pit one muscle against the other and create all this internal friction and force. And then you use a limited range of motion. So let's say you start at the bottom of the squat, ass to your heels. And you create this tremendous tension by gripping the ground with your toes, corkscrewing outward, flexing your calves, flexing your hamstrings, and you very slowly to a 10 count, rise up out of that squat to just a little bit above parallel. Because once you get much above parallel, it just becomes easier and easier. So you do maybe 2/3 the range of a normal squat.
Okay.
And then you do a very slow turnaround. And you literally pull yourself down with the antagonistic muscles till you're in the deep, deep, deep squat position. And then, of course, you perform your lower turnaround, barely stop it, barely start it, kind of hold and pause and squeeze and contract. I can make myself fail in about 4 squats.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And I took a professional trainer who claimed to, you know, use well over 500 pounds for barbell squats. And I actually was able to get the guy to do it. And he was utterly shocked at how he failed within about 4.5 squats. He just couldn't believe it. The hardest thing is getting people to do it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And not cheating and leaning and offing and awning and unloading and straightening their legs, you know. But you can take a simple bodyweight squat and make it almost impossibly hard. And that's what I'm teaching in my seminars now.
Okay.
You know, you don't need heavy weights. You can take a clever fella can take a relatively light weight and make it so hard he doesn't need to use heavy weights. But you're still working as hard as possible.
Right.
And you'll still get as strong as you're genetically able to get. But, you know, don't expect to go and slap 500 pounds on a barbell and do a barbell squat.
Right.
You would have to practice that.
Right.
But, you know, in walking up a hill or doing a sprint, or, you know, closed guard jiu-jitsu, you will be like a beast because that strength is 100% applicable to any sport, hiking, running, climbing, jiu-jitsu, you know, karate, kickboxing, doesn't matter, man. Ice hockey, you know, your legs will be so much stronger just with your body weight.
Yeah.
And this is the power of super slow. You know, so even a guy, I'm coming up, you know, I'm 70 years old, sir. And, you know, I'm able to work myself very, very hard, but very safe. Even with the shoulder I messed up doing kettlebell snatches, you know, I can still do push-ups and dips using that high tension and, you know, guarding the shoulder and protecting it. But I can still get full range, you know. The only thing I can't really do is overhead press.
Okay.
But I figured out a way to do pike push-ups.
Yep.
With two handles at 45 degrees where I lower my head. So I'm kind of a bit like in downward facing dog.
Yep.
Like
yep.
Yoga. And, but my hands are on this 45 degree angle. And then I can slowly lower my head down below my hands and get a really nice shoulder workout that way. And then I use the antagonistic cone contraction.
Okay.
So I'm using just a small portion of my body. I don't know what the actual weight is. It can't be very heavy, you know, but you know, using the high tension principles and antagonistic co-contraction, I can just really work my shoulders and triceps in a way that's extremely safe, that doesn't give me pain. And I know for a fact I'm not damaging my joints. In fact, my joints feel better after
doing it.
And, you know, with the equipment you have, you can do the same thing. But, you know, people don't need the skill of doing the body weight exercise.
Right.
Because it's just like weightlifting. There is a skill to it.
Yep. Yep.
And the skills don't transfer. The strength transfers.
Right.
But, you know, any skills that are required to do exercises, they don't transfer. You know, people always said free weights, oh, you're working your stabilizers. And it doesn't mean shit unless you're doing a bench press. None of that stuff transfers to anything else, you know. The strength does. But, yeah, I'm with you. I've been on the jiu-jitsu mat with guys who don't even lift, and they feel ridiculously strong.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I've had weightlifter, powerlifter types that seem relatively weak. It was shocking, you know,
yeah,
that they could lift as much weight as they do, but didn't feel particularly strong, you know.
Yeah.
A lot of the strength that they have developed is more like a skill,
mm-hmm,
you know? And Pavel always talked about that. Strength is a skill.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, it is when you're doing a one-arm super, you know, beast press with the 48 kilogram kettlebell, or you're doing a bench, or, you know, Olympic lifting or powerlifting. Yes. Strength is a skill. And that's, you know, they were always anti-failure. Well, yeah, of course. If you're trying to perfect a skill, you don't want to get tired. You know, you don't beat yourself up with a workout and then try to learn new jiu-jitsu. At least I hope you don't, right? You know, you want to go and learn your skills and practice your techniques while you're fresh. Then you go and work out maybe later in the day or the next day. But you certainly don't go after an ARX workout and go to jiu-jitsu class. That would be suicide, man, if you could even do it, you know? And so this idea that strength is a skill, it is only if you are a weightlifter. If you're doing feats, stunts, lifts, yes, multiple sets, heavy, low rep, practice frequently is the way to go, because your goal is how much weight can I lift? That's your sport. That's your recreation. You know, Ken's old,
yep,
exercise versus recreation. But if you want to build strength for other sports, no matter what it is, well, then the high intensity of training. And you're trying to make it as hard as possible. And you're not trying to use heavy weight. Not that you don't try to increase the weight, but the goal isn't the weight.
Right.
The goal is deep level muscular fatigue. It's a hard thing to get through to people, man.
Yeah, yeah. Challenging
because we've all been brainwashed. More is better, you know. If I lift a heavy weight, I'm strong, but not necessarily. Not necessarily. I've taken some pretty heavy, you know, guys that lift pretty heavy, and they weren't particularly strong in outside that particular lift, you know. And then there's guys that are,
yeah,
you know, that defy all the odds, you know.
Right.
But don't you find it interesting, you know, it was like a bell curve with most people in the middle, right? Most of us are somewhere, you know, average, a little above average. I always was above average, never great, never elite, you know, but pretty good, above average. And then you got those genetic phenoms at the far end, you know, your bodybuilders or, you know, pro NFL football players or NBA or, you know, the people with the really super high level skills.
Yeah.
And then at the other end of the continuum, you got people with little or no potential for physical strength or coordination or anything at all.
Yeah.
But all those people on the left and all the people in the middle are trying to emulate the guys on the far right. And it's a mistake because those guys would be big and strong no matter what they did.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. It could be the most god-awful program. I've met some guys that don't even do any exercise at all, and they're bigger and stronger than the average person, you know, just through genetics. There's always this tendency for everyone wanting to copy those people on the far right of the bell curve, and it's a big mistake because a lot of those guys, with their phenomenal genetics, they can defy all the odds. They have amazing recovery ability. They can work out twice as much as the average person. You know, they can do all these crazy exercises and seemingly get away with it. Although they too will eventually pay the price in osteoarthritis.
Yeah.
You know, look at your average NFL football player, you know, they suffer horribly when they get older. Now, okay, part of that's the impact of the sport, but a lot of it also is the crazy strength trainings that they do in addition to the impact. You know, the impact sport. And a lot of people will see like an injury, maybe an MMA or on football, they'll see this horrific injury. And they'll assume that the cause of the injury was what was happening on the field. They don't realize that injury was being produced for months in the weight room. For weeks and weeks and months, this guy was slowly eroding his joint strength and destroying his connective tissue with plyometrics and box jumps and, you know, kettlebell swings and all this stuff. And, you know, all of a sudden he playing soccer or, you know, or playing football or wrestling, and boom, he gets this catastrophic knee injury. That was just the straw that broke the camel's back. The real cause of the injury was stupid training. Stupid training. The guy had been building that injury and nursing that injury for a long time. And finally, the connective tissues and just, poof, it goes. And that's a little understood phenomenon too. You know?
Yeah.
A lot of times people just assume it was the sport, but that was just the little tip of the iceberg, you know. It had been going on for a long, long time. So, yeah.
Awesome. Well, Steve, I want to be respectful of your time. I would love if you maybe have you back on again. One of the things love to talk to you about too is like the joint mobility stuff that you do, because I think that's one piece that you know, even like with our super slow training, that we never really, when I was really in super slow before, it was just really you got all you needed from the training. But I think, you know, I know you do a lot of mobility work and joint mobility and movement practice, not so much to get stronger but or to build muscle, but just really to keep moving. And I'd love to maybe do a second some time down the road with that. And you know, we talked a little bit before, and I'll reach back out to you again, maybe try to get you down here to Greenville for a seminar sometime.
Man, I'd love to go. Who knows? I might move in next door.
But in the meantime,
I'm looking to get to South Carolina. I love it, man. It's such a beautiful state.
How can people, what's the best way for people to reach out to you, find out more about you, if they want to look at some of the products you have, or even reach out for coaching and that sort of thing? How do they best do that?
Well, the website is MaxwellSC.com, MaxwellSC.com. That's for strength, C for conditioning. And on my website, there's a contact information. They can email me and contact me there. I have, and I try to answer all the emails if I can.
Okay.
Now I can't promise to answer questions because, you know, I got paying clients, I have a subscription where people can train with me.
Okay.
By the month. And I also, now with this new Zoom thing, I became a Zoom master.
Yeah.
Who would have thunk? And yeah, I offer online workouts as
okay.
well.
Okay. Awesome.
And I also do webinars and so forth.
Okay.
I did one super slow just a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
Mostly Europe.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Webinar. Now, okay. I got you. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a keen interest in Europe on super slow now. Cool. Yeah. So, right. Yeah, they can contact me that way.
Okay. So, awesome. Awesome.
Thanks.
I appreciate it, Steve. Again, great pleasure to talk to you. I really enjoyed it. And I'll reach out back to you again. Maybe we do a part two, part three.
Yeah, yeah. That'd be great, man. Right. Hey, just curious. How long have you been doing jiu-jitsu now?
It's been right at about, 21 years now.
21. Okay, so you're black belt now, yeah?
Yeah, yeah.
So, congratulations.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's kind of like, I mean, so it was kind of interesting. It's like I started doing personal training in business, and then we added the jiu-jitsu school. So now, you know, in Greenville, we have our adult fitness program. We have some group training, and then I've kind of come, like I said, back full circle, really doing more one-on-one training, using a lot of super slow and high intensity techniques with that. We're doing more of that. And then we have our jiu-jitsu program as well. I don't really teach much anymore in jiu-jitsu. Rafael Hacendo is our chief instructor, but we have a school there, so we kind of have it all under one roof now.
Are you still doing the combatives and the self-defense and all that kind of stuff as part of jiu-jitsu?
Yeah, so we do. So we're an alliance affiliate. So I started training with Jacare in Atlanta. Back, like you're saying, like when I first started training, there was no jiu-jitsu in South Carolina. So I have to drive to Atlanta to train, which was a blessing looking back. But, you know, it's 2.5 hours one way, you know, and I try to go down there once a week and eventually open up my school when I was a blue belt, because just to have people to train with. And then eventually was able to bring Rafael from Brazil. And he's been here now, I think, how long has he been? Over 10 years now. So, and so it's been a blessing. But, yeah, so we're still doing all of that. Yep, yep.
Yeah, that's wonderful, man. One last little tidbit. A lot of people don't realize I was Royce Gracie's personal training coach for the first three UFCs.
Okay. I did not know that.
I was an original investor in the original UFC.
Okay.
It's back when Jorge and Gracie was running the show. And Royce was doing super slow.
Wow. Okay.
And Royce's wife was a certified super slow trainer.
Okay. Well, it's interesting because I just got to meet him. He came to our school like a month ago. Not to teach or anything. He was there for he was in Greenville for a different event. Got to go out to dinner with him. He got to spend a little bit of time with him. And so I showed him the ARX stuff. I didn't get him on there, but, but it was kind of cool. Yeah. I did not know that. I wish I'd have known that when I was talking to him. That's pretty cool. Yeah.
Well, like a lot of us, he kind of got away from it for a while,
yeah.
You know,
and
he started working with Chad Waterbury, you know, the guy that's in the high frequency training.
Okay.
You know, doing tons of pull-ups and push-ups every day.
Okay.
You know, he kind of, like a lot of us, he kind of veered from the
fold. Yeah. 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 Okay.
Because let's face it, super slow, it ain't fun.
Right.
But you just got to knuckle down and just realize that it ain't supposed to be. Don't try to make it. Do it because you should and because it's good for you.
Right, right. And I found that once people have had injuries, it's much more appealing. Because it makes it makes it more appealing. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. All right. Thanks, Steve. Appreciate it. Thank you.
I'll talk to you again soon.
All right.
Bye now.